Hello there, wearing four layers of warm clothing as I try to adjust to autumn, it's me, Michelle Cordens. And today I'm joined by co-hosts for the first time ever, because this topic calls for conversation. You'll hear from my colleagues at Perennia, Hugh Liu, the wild blueberry specialist, and Caitlin Congdon, the field crops and acting vegetable specialist. So why the conversation? Because Canadians love to talk about the weather. And in agriculture, we confront the weather, but if unprepared, we're bombarded by it. After the last few years, let's just say we've got extreme weather events on our minds. And wondering about the future, the question is our food system resilient to change? So today, we're not just talking about the weather, we're stepping it up a level to climate. Today's guest came recommended for his research on climate resilience in food systems. He has heard from our local growers in Eastern Canada and is interested in grower-led solutions. Our co-host Caitlin even attended one of his workshops and appreciated his practical approach. So prepare to learn what you can contribute to climate action with our guest, Bernard Soubry. Hi, Bernard.
Hey.
And we've got Caitlin and Hugh joining us here as well.
Hi, Michelle.
Hi, everyone.
So, Bernard, can you start off by telling us about your background and why you're researching climate resilience on maritime farms?
Sure. My background starts off when I started farming in the Maritimes. I worked in Hants County, mostly in East Hants, for a couple of years after training in BC for a season on small-scale vegetable farms. And I had done some work when I was in university. One of my degrees is in environmental anthropology, and I'd done some work on climate change there. And so it was always a thought at the back of my mind. And one of the winters and springs where I was farming was the one a couple of years ago in 2015, I think, where we had like 6 feet of snow in May. I'm not sure if you guys recall that one. It was pretty traumatic. And there were, you know, all sorts of discussions between different farmers, as you do, about weather changes and various other sort of weird weather events or trends that people had been noticing. And I went looking for information around climate change and food in the Maritimes and basically didn't find any. I started a master's the year after that at the University of Oxford. And basically, I wanted to understand what's going on in terms of climate change and how that's going to affect farmers in the province who are, you know, a big part of the economy, but who are also my friends and my community. There are ways in which we can adapt to climate change so that the shocks that are coming can be weathered and in such a way that we're not constantly picking up the pieces of different blows that are coming at us. And that's where I'm really interested, this idea of resilience, that when you do go through a shock, you can either bounce back or you can absorb some of those challenges a little bit better than you would if you hadn't repositioned yourself. I'm curious as to what that is. I'm curious as to what good farming looks like that takes into account all of those changes that are coming, even if we don't necessarily know what or how severe those changes are going to be.
So this is going to be the empowering talk on climate change, not the doomsday talk?
I'm hoping that it's the straight talk more than anything else, because okay. I think we need that more than anything else.
Yeah, so I think that's a really good segue into my first question. So the last few years have been a bit of a roller coaster when it comes to extreme weather. We've gone through some pretty significant events, including a spring freeze, hail, hurricanes, and drought. But similar events have happened in the past as well. So how can we consider weather events in the context of climate change?
One of the basic things to understand when you go into the world of trying to understand climate change is that weather and climate are separate things. Weather is events that happen day to day, you know, a hailstorm, a big rainstorm, wind. Climate is the trend of all of those different weather events, like precipitation in the Maritimes, like wind and rain and snow and hail have been getting harder to predict. It's temperatures that have been slowly increasing year after year over the past 20 to 30 years in the regions in Nova Scotia. I guess the thing that I want to address is the idea of like, this has happened before, because it's something that is often brought up by people who deny the science of climate change and who don't fully understand it. And I think the best metaphor that I can think of is like, imagine you get punched in the face. That sucks. That's a bad event. You don't like that. And then you go on with your life and 2 weeks later, you get punched in the face again. And you say, oh man, that really sucks. But I mean, it has happened before. I guess like getting punched in the face is part of walking around. And then for like the next week, every single day, somebody comes up and punches you in the face again. At some point you start saying like, I think there's a pattern here. I think I'm constantly getting punched in the face and this is different from what my normal life should be. That's the difference between weather and climate. Weather is getting punched in the face. Climate is realizing that the punches are a pattern and that there's deeper reasonings behind this. And there are ways of adapting to the fact that you're constantly getting punched.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
So I'm curious to know over the next 20 years, what are the uncertainties facing producers in the maritimes?
There's what we call like the known knowns and then the known unknowns and then the unknown unknowns. And climate change, when you're studying it or when you're trying to predict what the shocks are going to be, has all three of those. So for example, in terms of like the known knowns, we know that the temperature in the Maritimes is going to go up consistently. It has over the past 20 years, every single projection that we have goes up. And with the current rate of emissions around the world, that's locked in for the next while, unless there's a really, really precipitous drop. We know about that. We know that winds have been getting more consistent and more gusty across most regions. Although again, I guess I'll put a caveat, the Maritimes as provinces have a lot of different little microclimates, especially because they're coastal. So take everything that I'm saying with a little bit of a grain of salt, not because it's uncertain, but because I can't guarantee that it absolutely applies to the place where you live, just because the geography is so various. I'm talking about trends, not like specific places. And then there are also like the sort of the precipitation that has been occurring. We know that the certainly the East Coast of North America is going to get wetter. We've just lived through, as a species, like the worst recorded hurricane season that the East Coast of the Americas have ever seen. Those kinds of hurricanes are expected to continue and they're expected to get more intense. However, this is sort of like a known unknown. We don't know quite how frequent they're going to be because of the way that oceans work. And we don't quite know which years are going to go. You know, one of the things that we've seen in the Maritimes and that I've seen speaking to farmers is that whereas precipitation in terms of rain used to be pretty regular, like you could expect a thunderstorm every couple of weeks and you could expect rain like maybe once a week, maybe 30 or 40 years ago. Now what we're seeing is prolonged periods of drought followed by huge dumps of rain all at once, or like nothing going on for a while and then you get walloped by a storm. You can't quite tell when that storm is going to come. So that's some of the known unknowns. And then there's the grab bag of unknown unknowns. When we're talking about the uncertainties facing producers, I don't know what the global markets are going to do over the next couple of years. No one does. It's incredibly complicated and there's lots of models, but at the end of the day, you can't really know what crop yields in Ghana are going to be like and how that might affect your oat crop, to, you know, pull one example out of the air. You don't really know what national policies are going to look like that are going to affect farmers and trade and see, you know, what kinds of subsidies might be available. These are challenges that people are going to have to be ready to adapt to when they come without actually knowing when or in what form they're going to arrive.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the challenges we have this year in Nova Scotia and the Maritime Province is we have a very dry and hot summer during the growing season, and brought up a lot of challenges for our crops.
Yeah, and it puts a huge amount of stress on farmers, right? Because it's a situation, I guess in a perfect world where everybody had lots of money, you could just say like, well, prepare for drought and also prepare for flooding and also prepare for huge rainstorms and windstorms. But fundamentally, you've only got, you know, so much capital and you can only invest it in so many directions as a farmer. So it's, yeah, the problem with climate change is that it's not necessarily one event that is going to happen. It's that it often exacerbates all of the difficulties that you already have.
What type of on-farm adaptation and resilience strategies do small-scale farmers develop in response to environmental change?
You know, that's really a question for farmers and for growers and those who raise animals. And I don't want to speak as though I know everything that people are going to do. I can speak a little bit to my research and what I've seen so far and sort of the broad categories. It's really, really hard in most cases to figure out what people are doing in order to, quote, adapt to climate change, unquote, and what they're doing in order to just grow food the way they normally do. Like it is a farmer's job, broadly speaking, to pay attention to the weather and trends, both in terms of environment and in terms of ecology and in terms of markets, and to react and respond to those trends. Like that's, farmers are the ultimate field researchers in that they have to adapt to what's going on, and though they also have to adapt to the consequences of what's coming their way. So I just want to say that that's like, oftentimes when I did research, I would go to farmers and I wouldn't necessarily ask, what are you doing specifically to adapt to climate change? This gets very, very wonky, but it's based in the truth that right now, certainly in the Maritimes, it's difficult to look at specific events and say that happened because of climate change. There are ways of doing that. You can run statistical models, but right now, neither the Department of Environment nor the Department of Agriculture are running those kinds of models. That was a really big preamble to talk about how a lot of the farmers with whom I've spoken are building in different buffers into their farm systems. And what I mean by a buffer is something that's just gonna slow down rapid changes that might come. So there's been a lot of work on building soil, which is one of the biggest buffers that you can have in most agricultural systems. The use of cover crops is getting more and more widespread. And you know, we can get into the technical aspects of those, but essentially it helps you retain soil. It helps you build organic matter. You don't have to bring as many inputs onto your farm if you're somebody who's already bringing inputs. And it will, in you know, heavy weather situations, if you've got something planted in soil, it's going to retain it much more easily than if you had just like tilled and left something raw. I'm imagining sort of a vegetable situation. Obviously for perennial growers, we've got a different situation going on, but the idea of building soil and of building your soil structure and capacity to absorb both water, but then also to retain water in moments of drought, that's been a big technique that's been going on. Also, season extension. I work with small scale vegetable producers, and there's been a big push towards investment in quick to set up relatively cheap season extension that helps you get a little bit ahead in terms of the season in, you know, the early spring, and also helps you sort of buffer it out later on. These are sort of on-farm adaptations that farmers would be doing, I think, anyways. Some of the things that are most interesting that I've seen are what I would sort of characterize as like off-farm adaptations and things that you wouldn't necessarily think of when you talk about adapting to climate change. When I went out and spoke to farmers and asked them what they were doing to either get help or try to buffer some of the big shocks that they thought were coming, one of the most common responses that I got was working with each other. There's a much larger number of collaborations and of cooperatives that have come up in the Maritimes in the past couple of years than I think had existed maybe up to like the 70s or so. And that is not necessarily seen as a climate adaptation, but it has these knock-on effects, because when you can work with other people, suddenly you have a network of other folks on whom you can bounce ideas and with whom you can sort of build bigger projects than you would have normally. In southeastern New Brunswick, I interviewed a cooperative that has a bunch of vegetable growers who have come together. And by doing that, they've managed to have these huge projects come to light. So the co-op is called La Récolte de Chez Nous, the really local harvest co-op. They co-own, I think now possibly fully own, the Dieppe farmers market. They had an arrangement with the town of Dieppe. And so now there is, you know, they're not the only ones who sell it, but now all of this group of farmers suddenly has a guaranteed place where they can sell their food. That's huge in terms of financial resilience. It means that you're always going to have a market coming for you. They've banded together, they've hired various specialists to come to their different members' farms, which would otherwise have been prohibitively expensive. And at the end of the day, what that means is that you've built up this sort of buffer of financial resilience. Everybody's making a little bit more money. And financial resilience is climate resilience. because you don't know what shocks are coming, but you know that you're probably going to have to pay a bunch of money in order to get out of them. So the more that you can build up those networks of trust and those networks of information, and also the more you can build up the financial resilience of both your farm and the regional food system, then the better prepared you're going to be towards either sudden or slow moving changes that are coming your way. Those are the kinds of adaptations that I think are most interesting, because every farmer has a different farm. They're going to adapt in different ways, and it's not possible to just give people, you know, the top three things that you can do on your farm in order to adapt to climate change. Not everybody wants to build greenhouses, but everybody needs a group of people around them who can help them. And everybody needs a little bit more financial resilience and safety in terms of the markets. And those kinds of things are going to be really, really key to building a resilient food system in the Maritimes.
So this summer, Perennia actually hired our first ever protected crop specialist in response to that emerging need for expertise in all things undercover.
That's fantastic. That's really good to hear.
So you seem to have touched on this a lot already, that you really value you know, the grower's opinion and their own experiences on the farm, in, you know, how they know that the food system is vulnerable to climate change and any strategies for adaptation. So do you want to add anything to that?
I, in my research, have noticed this really weird and very frustrating dynamic where people will say that and then they will not actually involve farmers in their research or their policy making processes. So there's a, you know, I wrote a paper about this, actually. It's called Are We Taking Farmers Seriously? And it's this literature review of about 150 papers that I looked at over the past 10 years that talk about farmer perceptions of climate change. That was the terms that I was sort of looking for. And in most cases, the papers have this thing where they say, like, farmers are being affected by climate change. Let's look at what farmers are saying. You know, farmers in this area of like Uttar Pradesh in India said that this is happening. Except in 89% of the cases, the farmers were completely correct about what they had been observing in terms of trends over multiple decades. So it's important to say that farmers have a role in talking about what adaptation policy and what research should look like, because they do have that knowledge. But there is a huge problem that currently exists in the way in which we, as scientists, as practitioners, as policymakers, engage with farmers. And I want to emphasize that this is not farmers' responsibility. This is very much on the people who want to hear from farmers to create a space where it's a lot easier for people to feed in.
It's a really good point, because, you know, we know that there's really good local knowledge out there. We know they have a lot to offer in discussions, but it's true, we need to have the spaces where they can share that information. And I also just, you know, I really wanted to ask you that question because I want our listeners to know that they do have that knowledge, and, you know, they should take those discussions seriously if they have the chance to participate, that, you know, they have so much knowledge that they can share, and hopefully we can, you know, focus more on getting them implemented.
Okay. So what is involved in a climate adaptation plan, and can that be created on a farm level, or is it more of an industry level?
So I guess I just want to give a warning that I think it's something that you really have to pay attention to, especially with climate change, is that making any kind of plan requires this concerted and consistent commitment to changing that plan as different things arise. To the core of your question, I think it is a really, really good idea, both for farmers individually and for the industry in general, to do that sort of risk assessment and to get really literate in terms of processes that are going to be coming their way in terms of weather or climate trends. There's, you know, the government of Canada has this great website called climatedata.ca, where you can zoom in basically on a region that's, I can't remember how many kilometers by how many kilometers, but it's like quite high resolution. And you can look over the next 40 to 80 years and see, in terms of either temperature or growing degree days or precipitation, what you can expect based on different kinds of climate scenarios. So you can sort of see your worst case scenario and your best case scenario. Getting literate in that kind of risk is really important. So leaning more on your extension agents, not to give you guys more of a job, I think that's really important. And I think in terms of building a plan to adapt to those kinds of things, it's going to be really important to identify, I think, the values that are going to make you good at adapting. It's going to be more useful to say, like, what are the things that are going to make us good at adapting? We need to have more stable finances. We need to have, you know, extremely healthy soil that can build things up. And we also need to reduce any other risks that we might have seen that might be on the farm. What I'm talking about, I think, in the end, is less about building a climate adaptation plan and more about mainstreaming climate change into all of the parts of your thinking. If you are growing perennials, every decision that you make needs to be informed by your knowledge of what climate change is going to bring to the region. And that's not going to come in just like one specific plan. That's going to come in every single part of your planning. When you sit down at the beginning of the year and you say, you know, this is what I want to be growing, these are the sales that I want to make, you have to ask yourself, like, what are the risks that are already there and how are those risks going to be impacted by climate change?
Yeah, that makes so much sense. It's hard to write a static document for a target that's always moving.
That's a really great way of putting it.
Thank you so much for joining us. It was great. It was a different perspective because the three of us here are focused very closely on the details of production agriculture. So thanks for bringing the climate perspective. Yeah.
I'm so glad that I was able to participate. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. It was great to see you.
Thanks. Great to see you guys too.
Follow me on Twitter at NSTreeFruit and follow Perennia on Facebook and Twitter at NSPerennia. A world of thanks to Perennia for this podcast. Thank you to Patty Ryan for trapping our podcast emissions on the website and to Rachel Brown for resiliently editing the show. And of course, thanks to growers for solving challenges. And hey, they just harvested a crop, so we send our congratulations. Here's a fun fact. I love seeing small diseases or insects magnified, whether it's done using a macro lens or a microscope. The small details help me understand the impact of such small critters. Bye, and thanks for listening.